and I'm your host, Brian Beatty. Welcome to the October edition of the podcast. Our theme this month is tricks and treats. Because, as everyone knows, Halloween is just around the corner. When I was a child, only children cared about Halloween because of the costumes and the candy. But now I'm a grown-up and it seems like everybody, including grown-ups, is getting in on the act. And I'm not judging, because in recent years I have attended Halloween parties for grown-ups dressed as a sexy Unabomber and a sexy hippie dude, and most recently a sexy Amish man. I won't be going out to any grown-up parties this year, and I won't be dressing up either, because I've had it with people guessing my costumes right away, but then being unwilling to admit to their sexiness. I'm just going to hang out at home, wait for the serious trick-or-treaters to come, the ones who are able to find their way out of a house. Our featured writer for this month's edition is Rob Callahan. He's sharing a story called "The Names Have Been Changed to Protect the Survivors."
Joe lost his girlfriend when she jumped to her death. Now, he wasn't with her when she did, but he did see her earlier that night, and that last conversation they had still haunts him to this day. She asked him if there was ever a time in his life when he felt completely helpless, when he couldn't speak or move or even think for himself, and he told her no. She smiled then, and looked deeply into his eyes. And for a moment he got the feeling there was more than just her looking. And then she told him she hoped he never did, and that she loved him, and that she wanted to be sure he knew that. That she had one last chance to tell him while she still could. Now, she had no history of mental illness, and the autopsy showed no trace of drugs or alcohol in her system. The only thing found was a spider lodged inside her head, resting just on top of the brainstem. After some fruitless speculation as to just how it got there, the coroner concluded that its presence couldn't be explained, but that her erratic behavior and subsequent suicide could be attributed to having had her brain displaced, even as slightly as it was, by that little spider inside her. Over the next couple of years, Joe came to terms with his lost love, but he never stopped obsessing over that spider. He dug up all the information he could on parasites. He found wasps that lobotomize roaches and paralyze tarantulas, leaving them alive but unable to act against the laying and eventual hatching of larvae within their own still, helpless living bodies. He found parasites that force ants to vie hard for the attention of predatory birds, or simply jump from high branches to the hard, unforgiving ground below. The world of the minute and microscopic was rife with mind-eating and mind-controlling parasites, but most of what he could find about spiders was more along the conventional lines of their various neurotoxins' effects on their prey. He learned the widow and the recluse, most commonly blamed for death due to spider, are actually timid creatures that would rather run and hide than bite and kill. And even then, all but the most severe of allergic reactions results in vomiting and painful spasms at worst. But the Brazilian wandering spider is far more deadly, delivering a potent enough venom to kill an adult human in about 3 bites, and aggressive enough to chase a guy down to do it. They're also known as the banana spider, because they sometimes end up in supermarkets, having hitched a ride north within a bunch or two. So look out for those. He also found some extensive folklore surrounding the existence of a communal, cave-dwelling species of spider living in genetic isolation on a plateau in South America, whose incredibly strong venom doesn't kill, but first paralyzes, then causes hallucinations, and finally enhances every physical sensation the body can endure until the slightest touch is felt tenfold. If this spider were to bite you, you could only lie there, seeing things and feeling everything more intensely than you can really handle, as thousands of its little friends descend from the walls and ceilings and dine upon your body, and you die. Slowly. Eventually. After a few days of being nibbled to death by the swarm. But it took him years to find that page on GeoCities that had what he was looking for. Documented evidence that there's a kind of spider out there that lives exclusively within the brains of mammals. He emailed back and forth a couple of times with the site's webmaster, who gave her name as Melissa Scarlet, before they decided they should meet in person. Neither of them wanting to reveal their home address, they chose a neutral public location from which first to join forces against the eight-legged menace. Joe met Melissa in a library, one of the big, old ones with floor-to-ceiling shelves full of must and mold pressed tightly between the pages of countless tomes. He found her at a table with stacks of old books in front of her and iPod buds in her ears. He asked what she was listening to, and she said, "Revolver, but that's not important. Sit down." She was kind of crazy and kind of mean, and he kind of fell in love with that as she filled him in on the many hints throughout recorded history left by previous spider fighters. The Greeks, Romans, Byzantines, Aztecs, Egyptians, Zulus, and ancient Chinese all had their lesser-known legends about these spiders. They'd been infesting humans for as long as recorded history could show, and only rarely were they ever exposed. But now she and he were answering an esoteric calling that was as old as the parasitic problem itself, and soon they were teaming up against the unseemed, multi-legged menace. Now, she schooled him on everything he'd need to know. For example, these things don't just live in the brain. They learn to control it. Like strands of web, they manipulate the neurons and chemical synapses, a tap here and a tug there, stimulating the cortex with commands that grow harder and harder to resist. After a while, they're literally piloting our bodies around, guiding our actions, thoughts, and perceptions, while they rest comfortably inside our heads. She told him that over the time they take control, you'll notice changes in a person's behavior. They'll start out acting kinda weird as the bug finds its bearings, and then, over a few months, they'll gradually go from mildly erratic behavior to total debaggery as their own personalities are consumed by the mastications of the many-legged monsters within. She said you can tell when a person's possessed because you look into their eyes and you feel eight others looking back. You know that urban legend about the kid who scraped his cheek on a rusty nail and a few days later had dozens of baby spiders hatching under the scab? That wasn't an urban legend, just a true story that got its facts skewed over countless retellings. The truth was that these spiders weren't just getting in our brains and being benign about it. They used us as incubators. They laid eggs inside, and when that egg sac hatched, hundreds of little hatchlings poured out the nasal cavity or burrowed their way out through the ears or mouth in search of the next unspoiled brain. Now, a lot happened in the months after Joe first met young Miss Scarlet in the library, with the revolver. He started wearing a SARS mask to bed, because at night when you sleep, you're most vulnerable. And one night he actually woke up to something tickling his face, and he caught one, trying to squeeze its way under the mask. They both got a little paranoid after that, thinking the spiders were onto them, so they stepped up their efforts. They weren't just going to research and inform people anymore, they were going to actively hunt down the infested among us. They began to eat on the go and only sleep when exhaustion forced it. At all other times, they were on a mission to save the human race and free the infested from both their arachnid overlords and their respective mortal coils. Because there was no way to remove a spider from the center of another person's brain, not without making a big sloppy mess of a killing in the process. So Joe and Melissa avoided the mess and just went for the killing. And they were always out there looking for you. If you were a little weird and quirky, or you wouldn't make eye contact, or you wore sunglasses everywhere, they assumed you were hiding something, and God help you if they found out you were a spider zombie. For months, they quietly culled the ranks of the enemy and burned the bodies. It was long, hard work, and, combined with their diets and lack of sleep, it exhausted them. Melissa was the first to lose her gusto. She gradually slowed down and seemed less interested in the mission. She'd stop him and ask to sit, sometimes for hours at a time, and just talk. They got to know each other a lot better when they stopped spending all of their time killing, and after a while, Joe could tell that she was starting to feel the same way about him as he had for her back in the library. Even as she wore down and eventually donned a pair of sunglasses to cover her constantly sunken, dark, bloodshot eyes, they grew closer. And then one day, completely out of the blue, they had that proverbial serendipitous first kiss. And like any other first kiss that comes at the end of a long period of anticipation, their bodies were buzzed when their lips first touched. That trademark tingle of the touch you've been dreaming of shot down Joe's spine and stood his hairs on end. In all the excitement of it, he barely noticed that just inside his lip, the tingle was turning into more of a tickle, as if something tiny with a lot of legs was scurrying around his mouth. Then there was another, and another, and soon his mouth was filled with creepy, crawly little invaders darting about. He pushed her away, and when he did, he saw hundreds, maybe even thousands more, little baby spiders pouring out of her mouth. So he choked and spit them out as he ran, hoping none of them made it to the brain. I'd like to tell you there's some moral to be had, or a resolution, or some kind of happy ending, but I can't. Joe never saw Melissa again, and that's the last I know of their story. And for those of you wondering right now whether or not this story is true, I'll just say true enough. Of course, I changed the names to protect the survivors, but other than that, you can rest assured that these things really did happen, and they're still happening. And I hope none of you ever have to go through what Joe did, and I wanted to be sure that you knew that, and that I had a chance to tell you, to warn you, while I still could.
Rob Callahan knows more than most people do about spiders. His books include Hellbound Snowballs and A Wish Upon a Fallen Sky. Thanks for listening to this edition. Thanks for listening to any edition. If you have questions about the podcast, check us out on Facebook or check us out at mnartist.org. You Are Here is a monthly literary podcast production of mnartist.org. mnartist.org is a joint project of the Walker Arts Center and the McKnight Foundation. The mission of mnartist.org is to improve the lives of Minnesota artists and provide access to and engagement with Minnesota's arts culture.